Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. The purpose of today's podcast is to talk about Heavenly Father's transgender children. Joining me on the podcast is first Nika Allgood. Nika is an active member of the LDS Church and is the mother of a transgender son, Grayson. Grayson is here with us also, who's 23. The focus of today's podcast is several. Number one is to help LDS parents that have transgender children and to hear from Nika and Grayson as they talk about their family journey on this road. It's a beautiful journey and they have wonderful insights. It's also to help local LDS leaders that may have transgender people in their congregations and how best to support, understand, and respect them. It's also to help our transgender friends that may be listening to this podcast as they listen to Nika and Grayson talk about this road. And lastly, it's to help all of us as members of the church understand other members of the church that are transgender and these wonderful children of Heavenly Father that are walking this road and how best to respect, support, understand. I love the quote of Fiona Gibbons. It's sort of like this: to touch someone's cross, we have to understand the nature of their burden, and then we can truly help and support and lift their cross. And that, to me, is part of what we're trying to do. So thank you for joining us. This is our first podcast where we've had a transgender person on the podcast. We've had a prior podcast with Lisa Hansen, an LDS LGBTQ therapist that's talked to us about our transgender friends. But Grayson, you are the first transgender person we've had on the podcast, so thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's important to have the voices of the actual community members for talking about the issues, so thank you for doing that.
And I had the chance to meet Grayson, I think, at an affirmation, and then Grayson and I visited in my home about 6 months or a year ago, and it was a privilege to hear your story. Is very helpful to me to understand your journey and help me better understand my transgender friends. So thank you, Grayson, for joining us. So, Nika, maybe you can start. You and your husband, David, are raising kids, and then you gradually come to terms that you have a transgender child. Kind of walk us through that, and then we'll have Grayson share that journey also.
When Grayson was small, he was, in hindsight, a pretty gender-variant kid, but he liked computer games and Legos, and those seemed like very sensible things for both David and I, for a kid to like, and so we didn't really pick up on that gender variance. However, when Grayson went through puberty, that was very hard for him, and I think puberty is when Grayson started experiencing gender dysphoria. However, at that time, we didn't figure out that Grayson was trans, but I was seeing over time his distress with that. And beginning in his sophomore year of high school, Grayson began having what he called crashes. I don't know if you want to describe the internal experience of a crash, Grayson.
I mean, it's hard to describe. My memories of those things can be kind of fuzzy just because it was emotionally distressing in ways that my brain just didn't want to hold on to too closely. But it would be just overwhelming in an almost physiological way. Just being unable to think, unable to concentrate, getting visual effects almost like with migraines kind of thing, in response to situations where I had to be presenting in a more female way or something else that pushed the stress levels beyond just the baseline level of unavoidable stress to the point where it was really getting in the way of my ability to live my life.
From my outside perspective, what I was seeing was my bright, verbal child just shutting down when he had one of those crashes. And they were very concerning. And so I actually took him to the doctor and we explored, oh, was he having, you know, blood sugar swings that were causing this? Mm-hmm. No. We took him to a neurologist who was concerned that he might be having seizures or a brain mm-hmm. tumor, and did a whole bunch of testing and fortunately found nothing wrong. But it was a scary time for us. And, while we were in the process of doing some of that medical exploration, Grayson, finally talked to me about, his, feelings of attraction, felt like, there was a girl that he was attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
And,
because I had not been, you know, I didn't have the word transgender, you know, growing up just in a suburb in Utah, very much sheltered from, you know, understanding of LGBTQ issues. That wasn't a word that I knew. That wasn't a concept that I was aware of, but I knew that gay was a thing, and so that was something that I knew how to start a conversation about.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. So after we had talked about that, I went downstairs to the computer to do some research. And this was 7 years ago. And at the time, the church had nothing on their websites. That, you know, the Mormon and gay website was still several years out from that. But I did find Affirmation's website. And on Affirmation's website at the time, you know, they had a menu bar at the top that said, you know, lesbian, gay, transgender. And I think on a prompting, I clicked transgender. Wow. And started reading and viewing what was there. And as I did that, all the lights went off for me of, you know, how Grayson was feeling and the very masculine behaviors that I was seeing from him. And so the next day when we had some time alone, I explained to him what transgender meant and asked him if that was how he felt.
And that was, yeah, just a moment of, you know, oh, there's a word for it. It makes sense. Because, you know, even several years before that, I had been able to articulate to myself the, I feel more like a boy than a girl, but I didn't really know what to do with that. I didn't know that was a thing. And so it's hard to, and so I just tried to ignore that best I could, even though really I couldn't ignore it forever. But yeah, so after finally knowing that I wasn't alone in this experience, it definitely did connect with my own experience, you know, what my mom was describing. And so after that, I went and I prayed about it just in my room on my own.
And how old are you right now, Grayson? Are you 16, 15, 17, 18?
This was when I was 16.
Okay, you're 16 years old. You're high school age in Utah.
Yeah, and I went into my room that evening and prayed and, you know, talked to God about, you know, what I had just learned and asked, am I your son? And received a very powerful and profound answer, one that I really can't deny the reality of that spiritual witness that was the very distinct words, you are my son, and it's going to be okay. And it was still this new thing in a lot of ways that I didn't know how to process. I didn't know where my journey was going to go from here. I had no context of stories about, you know, what does life look like for a transgender person, especially a transgender Mormon, you know. But I trusted in God when he said that it was going to be okay. I didn't know what that okay future was going to be like, but I trusted that the Lord was going to make it happen, and that trust has been worth it. That promise that things were going to be okay was most certainly fulfilled.
After Grayson had that experience, he came and shared it with me. And he was lit up. That's the only way I can describe it. There are parents who have a hard time getting on board when they find out their child is transgender. But for me, that made it very easy to get on board. I knew he had prayed, and I knew he had gotten an answer.
This is a beautiful experience you two shared together and your family shared. So that's, tell some of the next steps. Did your emotional health immediately improve, Grayson?
It was definitely a big change in direction that in the months leading up to this, the emotional distress had been getting to a point where the only way I can think to describe it is in the words that I believe it was Alma the Younger used, talking about wanting to become extinct, both body and soul, the idea of eternal life seemed like a curse instead of a blessing. And to go from that to suddenly having hope, feeling like I could see a path forward that had light and happiness in it instead of just this constant, unavoidable corrosion of myself and my soul, it was huge. It made all the difference. And anyway, those first few, how long was it, like 6 weeks or something?
Grayson did a social transition from living as a girl to living as a boy.
Yeah,
start to finish in 6 weeks.
Define a social transition, if there's listeners that are just kind of learning this vocabulary for the first time.
So this is basically all of the, because this might not be something that you think about a ton if you're not familiar with the transgender experience, but gender is just everywhere in our society and in our day-to-day lives. And so social transition just refers to switching to presenting oneself in the gender that they identify as, in all the ways that are, what name you go by, what pronouns you go by, what clothes you wear, those kinds of
things.
Your
haircut.
Yeah. And so, changing your name and your pronouns setting on Facebook, that was in some ways the, official thing at the end of those 6 weeks. During those 6 weeks, there was some, having more in-person conversations with family and close friends. But then, after that was just the more general being Grayson in my whole life to everyone instead of few weeks of the awkward in-between thing of being Grayson at home and still going by old name and pronouns out in public. And so it was quite an interesting couple of weeks, but it was rebirth in a way. It was starting to feel alive again and feel like my life mattered and meant something again after all of that time. And so it was incredible.
Well, all right, Nika. Yeah.
There are a lot of parents of transgender kids who go through a grieving period, a sense of loss of the child they thought they had as they learn to love this new, different child. That wasn't my experience at all, because I had been seeing Grayson plummeting as his crashes got worse and more frequent. For me, the experience was getting my child back. Yes, my child came back with a different name and different pronouns, but I got my bright, happy, wildly creative Grayson back.
That's really cool. I wish our listeners could sit around the table right now, because the nonverbal interaction between you two is really tender. Mm-hmm. And I can just tell this wonderful mother-son relationship. And Dad's here too. We haven't put Dad on the mic, but this is a beautiful family that's just here. And it's very tender to me to watch the interaction with all of you here. Talk about how you found the name Grayson.
My old name was Grace, and so the reasoning behind choosing the name Grayson was that it would be easy for people to correct themselves if they were making a mistake. And anyway, that was my dad's idea.
We did have a couple days where the whole family was brainstorming name suggestions, most of them dreadful, to be humorously intent. And once we told Grayson's brothers, they launched right into being helpful, and I put that in air quotes, with choosing a new name for Grayson.
Like grass or gross or...
This is beautiful, the way the whole family's coming together.
Yeah. It was a tremendous blessing having my family be able to be there as a support for me during this. And I know that that's not the experience that a lot of transgender people have had, that for a lot of people, it ends up being this very painful situation where their families aren't being accepting or being understanding. And so it can be a very isolating experience. And for me, being able to find myself again in the context of my family and my community and my friends and all those things, that was a tremendous blessing for me.
Tell us a little bit about your interests, Grayson. Tell our listeners what you like to do and what you're pursuing and what your dreams are, and then we're going to come back to the story.
Sure. So I was a linguistics major at the university. I'm not in school these days, not planning on going back in the near future. But I certainly loved my studies of linguistics. I'm working on a novel. I've had several novel ideas that I've worked on in the past, but this one's gonna be the one where I actually finish my first draft. I'm determined.
You can do it.
So I like writing and I like music. I've been in choirs since like seventh grade. It was actually, that just before I transitioned, me and my little brother were in the stake choir, wasn't it?
Stake choir for our state conference.
Yeah, and then...
And they both sang the high tenor part.
Yes, they Grayson had a dire need of tenors, and so... and I had a big enough range that I could sing that, and so... and that was also definitely something where it felt a lot better for me, even if I didn't know how to express why that was. But anyway... and then the very next state conference, we were also both still in the choir singing the high tenor part. This time, me in a suit and
your CTR tie.
Yes.
there's a funny story about Grayson singing. For a long time, every year, Grayson and I would go to Utah Symphony's performance of the Messiah, that sing-along Messiah. And the first year we went, Grayson sang the soprano part. And then he decided he was more comfortable in the alto part. And so sang that for several years. And then after he transitioned, he switched to singing the tenor part until he went on testosterone. And now he is a bass baritone. And so he sings the bass part in the Messiah.
Yes,
he's the only person I know who's done all four parts.
That's really cool, Grayson.
Yeah.
That could be part of your novel. while we're talking about your musical experience, will you just sing a song for us, a church song for our listeners?
Sure.
Thank you.
Where can I turn for peace? Where is my solace? When other sources cease to make me whole? Where with a wounded heart, anger or malice, I draw myself apart, searching my soul. He answers quietly, reaches my reaching in my Gethsemane, Savior and friend. Gentle the peace he finds for my beseeching. Constant he is and kind, love without end.
Wow, that was so well done, Grayson. Thank you for sharing Where Can I Turn for Peace with our listeners. I felt a wonderful spirit there.
Yeah, going on testosterone and having my voice change was definitely something that was very important for me in terms of being able to feel like myself, because since singing is important to me, being able to sound like myself, being able to sound male has been important for me, although it was kind of amusing. So when I went on testosterone, which was about a year and a half after my social transition, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you were 18.
So let's stop right there. So the social transition, because I want to get into that, was about a six-month process.
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
This was 6 weeks. You did say that.
So. Yeah.
That was 6 weeks. It was a family effort. It sounds like the family was unified, walking this road together. I love, Nika, what you've kind of talked about, how you got your son back. You got your child back, this bright, beautiful, gifted young man. And there was maybe less grieving than some parents of transgender children. So that's very helpful. And it sounds like then the social transition ended. And that sounds like, and I'm pretty new to this world, so I'm trying to communicate this accurately to our listeners, if you shared it with me, is that's the name Grayson. It's presenting yourself as female. It's a male. Mm-hmm. It's the haircut, the dress, and you're a man. You're presenting yourself male.
Yeah.
And the social transition doesn't involve any testosterone or any of that stuff at this point.
So that would, testosterone would be considered part of a medical transition.
Okay, so what's the next phase then? If the first phase is social transition, what would you call the next phase?
So it's not so much like a sequence of phases necessarily, because transition can be a different process for everyone.
That's
it depends
helpful.
A lot on the context. So there's social transition, which is, you know, in name and one's, you know, presentation towards the world in those behavioral things. There's also elements of legal transition, like doing legal name change and legal gender change, and, you know, getting driver's license and passport and stuff updated so that your picture actually looks like you. Because it can be very awkward in situations where your legal documentation doesn't match up with the presentation that people might be seeing. Anyway, so there's elements of legal transition, and then there's also medical transition, which would be things like hormones and surgery and that sort of thing.
So that's very helpful for our listeners, and I'm thinking a lot of our listeners are kind of new, like me, and trying to understand. So talk how you as a family kind of handled the medical transition?
I need to start by saying that Grayson is very open about his transition and has given me permission to be open about his transition.
But that does not mean that it is necessarily polite to ask whatever random trans person you know about, oh, what surgeries have you had?
That's like, very helpful.
You know, it's not cool to ask people about their private medical history or their genitals for that matter. And so, like, as a word of warning,
just don't.
Be polite.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
So, Grayson's social transition really improved his mental health. But after about a year and a half, during his freshman year at college, he began experiencing a lot of dysphoria again. Gender dysphoria is that feeling of distress a trans person feels about the mismatch between who they know themselves to be and their social presentation or their bodies.
Or the way that they're perceived
by the world. Yeah. Grayson was living an hour away from home in student housing at the University of Utah. And we were staying in touch, but I was seeing him really not doing well. And I mean, there were, just as an example, there was a scary evening where I stayed on the phone for an hour with Grayson while my husband hauled down to the University of Utah campus to pick Grayson up and bring him home because he was feeling suicidal.
That's honest.
And we needed to have him home where we could keep him safe. And so as I was watching him do more and more poorly, I was praying what to do to help Grayson. And one night I was awake in the middle of the night. And as I was thinking about what I could do to help Grayson and praying, the scripture story about Abraham being asked to sacrifice Isaac, came to mind.
And I guess for context, we need to mention that, so when I was doing my social transition at first, I had wanted to go on testosterone, from the beginning. So I talked to my local church leaders and, was told that it might be grounds for church discipline if I did any medical aspects of transition, and at that point prayed about it, and the answer that I received was wait, and so I waited up until this point.
I was thinking about Abraham being asked to sacrifice Isaac, and the thought came to my mind that that's the kind of sacrifice that Grayson was making.
Wow.
By not going on testosterone. And I realized that God had sent to Abraham a ram in the thicket and an angel to stay his hand. And that for Grayson, the ram in the thicket was testosterone, and that it was time for him to go on testosterone. And so the next day when I picked Grayson up from the train station, I told him about that experience. And said, you know, that this was his body, and so he needed to get confirmation of that. And he said, well, I think I already did, because in the train on the ride home, what I was told by the Spirit was, listen to your mother.
It's a great story.
Yeah. And we looked into getting Grayson on testosterone, and did that when he was 18. And it was interesting. Grayson tried to wait. But for him, his dysphoria had become life-threatening. These were not optional medical choices for him. These were life-saving.
So talk about either Nika or Grayson going on testosterone.
So there's one funny story that I like to tell about going on testosterone. So when you start on testosterone, they tell you that it's going to be about 3 months until your voice starts to change and 6 months until you start growing facial hair. And at this time, I was in choir. I might have been in two different choirs at the time.
You were.
Because I was in institute choir at the U, and then also in another choir. And in one of my choirs, I was signed up for a solo. And this was, of course, in my old register.
High tenor range.
Yes. But this was only 1 month after I started on testosterone, and so I figured, oh, it's not going to be a problem, you know, that'll be, you know, it's not going to be for another 2 months after that until I start getting my voice changing. But anyway, the week before my solo, my entire range turns to peanuts.
His voice started cracking.
Yeah, just all of the, you know, classic
second puberty.
Yeah, and so yeah, I wasn't able to do my solo because, yeah, it was only 1 month until my voice started changing and only 3 months until I started growing my first facial hair.
Like in puberty.
Yeah. Which might have been because, so they did a blood test before I started on testosterone to see what sort of the baseline hormone levels were like. And as it turned out, baseline levels of both the male and female hormones were abnormally low, which suggests that there might have been some sort of subtle intersex condition going on. I suppose we should talk a little bit about intersex as it relates to
right.
Yeah, talk about intersex, Nika or Grayson.
So we tend in English to have this very binary view of gender, male or you're female. The biological reality for human beings is a lot more complicated. About 1.5% of humans have some detectable intersex condition, which means that they don't fit neatly into the box of male or female. These are biological conditions, sometimes due to chromosomal differences or sometimes other genetic differences. Sometimes they are due to prenatal exposure to certain chemicals.
It's worth mentioning that that percentage of the population that is intersex, that's approximately the same amount of the population that, for example, has red hair. So this is certainly a non-trivial fraction of the population.
Right. And intersex people are real. And so when we have discussions of the human population and human gender, it's important that in our conversations we hold space for the reality of intersex people. Human beings come that way a certain percentage of the time.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Walk us through some of the old vocabulary that we don't use for intersex, Nika, just to help our listeners kind of, because there's been terms that's described intersex in the past that generally we're not using.
Right. Intersex in older medical literature was sometimes referred to as disorders of sexual development, DSD. the preferred term is a difference of sexual development because there's nothing disordered about being intersex. It's just a way people come, any more than having blue eyes rather than brown is a disorder. It's just a difference.
I like that. That's yeah. very helpful.
Yeah. It's also worth mentioning that hermaphrodite is a term that has been sometimes used to refer to people with intersex conditions, which is generally considered offensive these days. And so it's important to listen to people when they talk about what terms they prefer. But generally intersex or differences of sexual development and not something like hermaphrodite.
That's very helpful because I think there's a lot of societal deprogramming that needs to go on as we picked up terms that we're no longer using or were not helpful terms. Yeah. That's very helpful.
Yeah. And I think that idea of some terms are not helpful is a great frame to use our language. Does our language include people? Or does it otherize them?
Yeah. As a you know person who's studied linguistics, this is definitely something that's of interest to me. The language that we use to refer to the variation within the human experience, there's always a certain interplay of language and culture that the words that we use to describe and categorize things reflects. And reinforces the cultural ideas about how things work and what the categories are. And so in describing gender in English, we tend to describe things in this very binary, there's male or there's female way. But it's worth pointing out that that is not a universal trait by any means of languages or of cultures, that there are numerous cultures throughout the world and throughout history that have acknowledged in their culture and in their language more than two gender boxes or categories in a way, that systems that acknowledge three or four are also relatively common. For example, if I recall correctly, among the traditional Navajo culture, there were four gender boxes, which roughly corresponded to something like masculine man, feminine woman, feminine man, masculine woman. And again, any categorization for something as complicated as human gender and sexuality is necessarily going to be a reduction. There's no way for language to describe it perfectly. But it's worth thinking about how good of an approximation is our language for the reality that we are trying to describe, and what can we do to make our language a better tool for communicating the reality of human experience.
So in English, a word that is coming into common use is non-binary, and it is a way for a person to describe, I don't fit neatly into that male box or that female box. I'm non-binary. I fit someplace else.
Talk about this medical transition. So if there's our listeners listening, parents that are looking for principles from you, Nika or Grayson, that can be helpful to them to know when to the right time to go on hormones, for example. What advice would you give to families walking this road?
I need to start by talking about the option of hormone blockers. And blockers are appropriate when it is a child or younger teen. And what blockers do is put puberty on hold. And the important thing about blockers is that they are reversible. If a young person chooses to go off blockers after about 6 months, they would continue to proceed through puberty on their body's agenda. So what blockers do is buy time. They buy time for the child. They buy time for the parents. So if a 10-year-old child is starting puberty but identifies as transgender and would find their biological puberty to be very traumatic, they have the option of going on blockers and waiting. And because blockers are reversible, that weight means that they can make some irreversible decisions when they're a few years older. So if parents know they have a transgender child,
or a gender variant
child,
In younger years, it can be difficult sometimes to distinguish between transgender and just gender variant in other forms.
So my recommendation for parents who have a younger child who hasn't gone through puberty yet or who is very early in puberty to look into hormone blockers as a way of putting puberty on hold until their child's a little older.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. So hormones vary in their effects depending on how old a person is and how far their biological puberty has already progressed. For a child who has gone on blockers, then going on hormones that match their identity, they'll go through puberty pretty normally. You know, if we had figured out when Grayson was 10 and gotten him on blockers then, when he went on testosterone, it would have been exactly like any other boy going through puberty.
Interesting.
So if parents can figure it out early, that leads to a much better outcome for their child physically.
And also psychologically, I would point out that even for someone like me, where I didn't start experiencing the acute distress of gender dysphoria until I went through puberty and I was able to transition relatively young, you know, even still, the years that I spent dealing with gender dysphoria, which is hard to describe to someone who hasn't experienced it, but one metaphor that I like to use when explaining the experience of gender dysphoria is that it's kind of like motion sickness. So motion sickness is the cause of that particular experience is when your senses, like your eyes and your the balance detector in your inner ear, when they disagree about whether you're moving or how fast or in what direction, 'cause your brain is meant to incorporate multiple sources of information and synthesize them into a single coherent picture of what the world is. And when two sources of information are strongly conflicting with each other, that creates a very distressing feeling, you know, almost a physically sick kind of feeling, and that gender dysphoria is that sort of thing, that when the internal parts of your brain that know what your gender is and external signals like how people treat you or what you've been told about who you are, when those come into conflict, it creates this distressing mismatch. And it's because gender is so much everywhere, something that's impossible to get away from in society, and you know, every time you look in the mirror, every time you hear the sound of your own voice, having that distress that you can't fix, you can't get away from for years, you know, even the relatively few years that I dealt with it, I still feel like had lasting consequences in some ways. And it I'm tremendously grateful that I was able to get on a better path as quickly as I could. But I know that things would be a lot easier for me if I...
if we had figured out he was trans earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, Grayson. I love the visual of seasickness and sort of the unsettledness of that. That can really relate to that. It's a wonderful example. You're a really courageous man to share your story like you're doing. It's very helpful for our listeners, and you have a very wonderful way of articulating and create visuals that I think help people understand. Talk about, you know, sometimes I'll hear stories of people not giving cred to people that are transgender, and they say this is just a fad or this is just a phase and we ought to not honor how someone feels and this will pass. And I'm sure you've heard those kind of stories. How do you sort of help people that may think that this is just a short-term phase with a child and it will pass if I just don't talk about or acknowledge it or confirm it? Any thoughts on that kind of tender question?
My youngest had appendicitis and had to have his appendix removed. And I think it's worth, from a parent's point of view, saying if your child came up to you because they had appendicitis and said, I have pain, would you say, oh, it's probably just a phase, let's ignore it and hope it goes away?
I like that.
My Grayson was in pain, and I didn't want to ignore the pain he was expressing. I wanted to believe him, just like when people tell me they have physical pain.
So you're looking
for, I believe them.
Yeah. That's very helpful. I love that, Nika. Any thoughts on that, Grayson?
I know that a lot of people tend to draw a rather antagonistic view towards trans people and trans issues from LDS teachings. A lot of people interpret it in a very hostile way towards trans experiences. But I don't think that that's inherently a part of the gospel or, you know, or even our doctrinal understanding of gender. I mean, it talks about, even in the family, the proclamation to the world, how gender is an attribute of the spirit, fundamentally, that that's something that we had in the pre-existence and will continue to have in the eternities. And we also know that our physical bodies are imperfect, that one part of this mortal experience is that our bodies don't reflect our spiritual selves perfectly. You know, sometimes we aren't born with all of the senses that that others might have, or, you know, are born with various deformities or conditions or physiological problems, that's just a part of the mortal experience. And the parts of our mortal bodies that we use to, you know, when the doctors look and try and say, you know, it's a boy or it's a girl, those are just as susceptible to mortal flaws and failings as any other part of the body. And so what would we consider a better way of understanding what someone's gender truly is by looking at the mortal body, which we know to be flawed, or by asking about someone's spirit, which it's a matter of that person themselves to express what their spirit is, that we in our present state can't see each other with perfect eyes, and so we just have a responsibility to listen to each other and have faith in each other to express our truth as best we can.
When Grayson first came out to me and I was explaining to him what transition was and what being transgender was, I pointed to his body and I said, you know, here you have a girl's body. Who are you here? And I pointed to his head. And I expected him to say, oh, I have a boy's brain. But he didn't. He said, I have a boy's soul.
Wow.
And when I heard him speak that, he spoke truth.
Wow. That's very, very helpful. There's just a wonderful spirit in our room as we're talking about this. I hope our listeners can feel Nika and Grayson and some of the deeply personal spiritual experiences they're sharing. I've certainly tried to, as I've gotten older, to not form opinions about other groups of people until I meet with those groups of people. As many of my listeners know, I did a hard drive reset and just said, I don't know what degree of homophobia I have within me, so I had to go meet with gay people. And the same with transphobia. I don't realize how much stuff I picked up in society, so I've really tried, and that's something I'd encourage our listeners to do is, you know, don't talk to cisgender people about transgender people. Go talk to Grayson and hear his story and in a real thoughtful way say, well, I should probably learn from men like Grayson about transgender people and then form my opinions after I hear a bunch of stories. So this is a really helpful story, and it's certainly my journey to revisit a lot of the things I picked up about gender. And to me, as an active Mormon, everything you're sharing, it fits still within the doctrine that I believe in. I realize it's difficult to know on a local level how transgender people fit into the third hour, Relief Society and priesthood. But everything you've said from a doctrinal standpoint and gender being eternal fits within my paradigm of my understanding of our restored church that I believe in. And I think we're learning and seeking for more light and understanding. I want to kind of give, you know, advice for parents that are just coming to terms that they have a transgender child. Just give us more thoughts on that, because I do, like, I'm sure you get lots of messages. I get lots of messages from parents that are just coming to terms that they may have a transgender child, and they have no owner's manual. There's no Relief Society or Elders Quorum lesson that's prepared them for this, so it's just so far out of their perspective reality that it's very difficult for them to sort of know how to navigate this road.
And I definitely honor the difficulty and the complexity of that. I have talked to many parents of trans people as well, and the real pain of dealing with these things that parents aren't well prepared for by our current society, or even the knowledge that the church currently has. But I would point out that one of the things about our church that makes our church unique and powerful, and one of the things that still connects me to the church and to the gospel and that matters deeply to me, is that we believe that the heavens are still open, that we believe that we still don't know everything that God has to teach us, that there are still many more great and precious things yet to be revealed. And we also believe that each and every one of us has the potential to connect with the divine for ourselves and receive truth directly. That was the root of where the restoration of the church came from, was that you didn't have to be someone special with a high and lofty calling or lots of money or any of those things, that you didn't have to have those things to hear from God, that a 14-year-old boy in a grove of trees could ask and get an answer. And that's one of the things that, as I've been on this journey as a transgender person, my understanding of and my reliance on personal revelation has deepened so much, and I'm incredibly grateful for that experience. That I, you know, growing up in Utah in the middle of the suburbs where there's a chapel on every corner, I very much took the church for granted in a lot of ways, and the church provides this picture of what your life is supposed to look like that definitely has its uses. But it's also this very one-size-fits-all sort of thing where when we get too complacent in relying on this picture of how things are supposed to be, that can stunt our spiritual growth in some ways. And I feel like the push out of my comfort zone that being trans has provided me has been invaluable in terms of making me grow in ways that maybe I wouldn't have if I'd been able to just coast along comfortable in what I already knew and was always hearing all around me, that having to be in a situation where my local leaders didn't know what to do and didn't have all the answers, where I had to pray and ask for myself, where I had to just put my trust in God and figure things out as they went, that has been incredibly valuable for me. And so in many ways, I'm grateful that I'm transgender, even though it's also been difficult, because, you know, our trials make us grow. And I think that God gives us the trials that we need to grow in the ways that we need to. And I think that, so going back to the experience of parents, yes, I acknowledge that it can be difficult parenting a child who has trials that you don't know how to help them with, but you can be there for them as they go through those trials, and that maybe this is something that you need as well. And so I would encourage you to trust God and trust in your child, and talk to each other, talk to God, and that as long as you are communicating and acting in love, that it's going to be okay.
That's excellent. Thank you, Grayson. Nika, any things to add for parents?
I want to first second everything that Grayson said, but I also want to encourage parents to reach out to other parents of transgender children to talk to. For LDS parents, there is the Facebook group, I'll Walk With You, LDS, parents of LGBTQ kids, and there is a subgroup of that now that's available for parents with transgender kids. They need to join the I'll Walk With You group first. So that is a secret group. You can join it without outing your kids. And you can go and ask questions and share your experience and listen to other parents' experience. And that is just so valuable when the parenting manual doesn't have what you need.
And any of our listeners, I think you can find Nika, N-E-C-A, All Good, A-L-L-G-O-O-D on Facebook, and just message Nika, and I think she can guide you to those two Facebook groups she just suggested.
Yeah, I would be glad to help parents get connected with other parents.
I want to talk about helping our local leaders. So if we had a bunch of bishops and Relief Society president, elders, quorum president, stake leaders sitting around our round table, and they are trying to do the best they can for families with transgender people, I'm sure you've had some good experiences and some difficult experiences. And that's my experience talking to transgender people. When I served as a bishop, didn't have any transgender members, at least that talked to me about being transgender, so I had no firsthand experience when I served. But what advice would you give for local leaders to best support, understand, respect, love their transgender members?
Well, first of all, I've been very fortunate that I've had more positive experiences with local leaders than negative ones, which is unusual. We joke sometimes in the LGBTQ community, the LDS parts of it, about Bishop Roulette, that this is particularly true with trans issues, because they're isn't really much in the way of guidance in the handbooks or anywhere regarding trans issues, and so it's very much it depends how willing to listen and have an open heart your local leaders are. That for me, I was lucky enough to have local leaders who were willing to listen with an open mind and an open heart and trust in my sincerity and good intentions, and that went a really long way. And I also know that there have been a lot of trans people where their leaders have not had that same open heart and have not given them the benefit of the doubt, and that has resulted in real pain and has pushed people away from the church a lot of times forever.
That's very helpful. Nika, things to add to that? It's very helpful, Grayson.
A couple things. One is about clothing. Usually for transgender people to comfortably attend church, they need to be in the clothes of their affirmed gender. There is nothing sacred about a skirt or a white shirt. If we're serious about welcoming people to church to participate in worship with us, we need to welcome them regardless of the clothes they're wearing. Next, I need to point out that there's a lot of aspects of our services that are very gendered. And there are transgender people for whom the very gendered nature of our services is very triggering for their dysphoria, and it's just hard for them to go. And we need to not confuse lack of attendance with lack of a testimony. There are people who have deep and abiding testimonies and have a hard time going.
That's right. Very helpful.
And finally, there's that third hour of priesthood and relief society. And I know that different wards and stakes and regions have adopted different policies about attending meetings and what meeting to attend and how rigid they want to get about preventing people from attending meetings in that third hour. It's not my job to set church policy, but I feel like it is hard for people to have a spiritual experience when they are in the throes of a dysphoria meltdown. And so if attending Relief Society lets a transgender woman experience, learn from the lesson, and feel the spirit without a dysphoria meltdown, why would we not invite her to attend Relief Society? And similarly, if a trans man gets to learn the lesson and feel the spirit by attending priesthood meeting, why would we not want him to be sitting in priesthood meeting, learning and feeling the spirit and sharing his experiences?
I love that you personalized that. That seems very, very helpful as our local leaders. And I agree, the experience I've had is that there's, you know, differences between wards and stakes as leaders are trying to navigate this. So I think you sharing your perspective, if there's leaders listening, is very, very helpful. I want to talk about this term passing. Somewhere I picked up this idea that I should just honor Grayson as Grayson. I shouldn't go through mental hurdles wondering anything about you from a social transition, from a medical transition. If you want to be Grayson, and then I, as just a common courtesy and a sign of human respect, honor that. And my mind shouldn't really go to hormones or medical transitions or top and bottom surgery, and I shouldn't ask that, as I think you mentioned. And I'm still learning, so help us understand passing and what things should or shouldn't be in my mind as I interact with my transgender friends.
Well, I mean, obviously we only have a certain amount of control over what thoughts happen to enter into our minds, and a lot
You're
of
very empathetic.
Yes, and a lot of times what first jumps into our minds is not so much a reflection of ourselves as of the cultural things that we have internalized, and there's a lot of very negative things within culture that we end up internalizing, all of us. One way that I visualize it is like we go through our lives breathing the air, and that sometimes there's poisonous things out in the air, you know, like pollution that's getting spewed out from the factories and everything, which I'm sure if you live in Utah, you can relate. But we spend our whole lives breathing in that poison, and when you spend your whole life breathing in that poison, you end up breathing it back out again without even realizing what you're doing. And it's not because you're trying to poison people, it's just because that's what you've been breathing in. And so it's understandable when that happens, but it's also part of our responsibility, our own spiritual journey of growth is to overcome the negative elements of the culture that we live within and try to change things for the better where we can, and try at least not to pass on the things that we have been exposed to. Anyway, so that was perhaps a bit of a tangent. So passing is complicated.
We need to make sure people understand what we mean when we talk about passing.
Define that for us, Nika.
So, passing is this really loaded word, but basically what it's talking about is how much a transgender person looks like their affirmed gender, right? So,
or is how much other people will perceive them as their affirmed gender.
I love this term, affirmed gender. That's kind of a new thing I'm learning in this podcast.
Yeah.
That's a very helpful term within this discussion.
And so, you know, the reality is that for people who transition later in life, even if they pursue a medical transition, the signs of their earlier puberty remain in their body, right? Mm-hmm. And if we were to look at a transgender person who transitions later in their life, they're visibly transgender.
A lot of times, not always.
A lot of times, yes. And so they don't pass, again, in air quotes. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that they're transgender. And the reality in our society is that we live in a pretty hostile world for transgender people, and transgender people, particularly those who don't pass well, are often subject to violence. And
this is very helpful.
And the consequences of that violence are very real, and this especially targets people who are transgender in the more male to female direction, that they're particularly the targets of hostility from our culture. You hear a lot of messaging that portrays such people as dangerous or scary.
Or predatory.
Yeah. And that the consequences of that rhetoric is that people react to trans women with violence. And the murder rate for transgender women is terrifyingly high, especially for transgender women of color.
Yeah, it seems a scripture comes to mind is perfect love casts without fear, and there's a great deal of fear in our culture. And so it seems like as we can better understand and love each other, we cast out there's fear. There's a great deal of fear and unknown, or things that are out of our paradigm or are difficult for us to understand. So we create fear, and that can create anger and sort of the things you're talking about, Grayson.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to invite members of the church to recognize that transgender people are at risk in our society, and that we, by seeing them for who they are, as children of God, can love them and protect them when we speak up and say, it's not appropriate to call a human being it.
That's great.
We protect them. When we step up to defend people from other people's unkind words, we protect them. And that's a way that we can love and serve our fellow human beings.
And it's worth pointing out that this also, that this doesn't just matter when the person in question is present. It's not only a matter of protecting their feelings, while that is also important. Even when it's, you know, just a conversation among cisgender people, and there's rhetoric that dehumanizes trans people or portrays them as dangerous, that matters even when the trans people aren't around to hear it, because that, you know, is again expelling more of that poison into the air that other people are breathing in, and that even if that's not having an impact on someone who's right there at the very moment, what are the people who are listening going to be learning from the things that we're saying? You know, what are our kids going to be learning from the way that we talk about other people? And you'll see the consequences in schools and things, that kids will act out the prejudices that they hear from their parents, and that can have terrible consequences. And so even if you yourself, you know, would never dream of laying hands on someone to act out those prejudices, those words still carry violent power.
That's very helpful, Grayson. And just to stay on passing a little bit, I think what I'm trying to do, and help me because you know more about this, I'm not trying to figure out if someone passes or not. I'm just looking at them as a fellow human being and recognizing their preferred gender, affirmed gender, without sort of any mental hurdles in my brain. And I think, Nika, you do a good job of saying it's harder for some people. They appear transgender, and we may know that. But I think what I'm trying to do, and I think what you're teaching, is that shouldn't matter to me. I shouldn't look at someone and wonder the degree of passing. It seems to me, as a fellow human being, and what Christ taught in the New Testament, is I just should show love and kindness and recognize someone affirmed gender without any hurdles that they need to go through. It seems like that costs me nothing. It costs me nothing to call Grayson Grayson. Even the first day you took on the name Grayson in your social transition, to me that would cost me nothing. And it just honors you. And so that's kind of the road I'm trying to be on. And it seems consistent with our doctrine. It seems consistent with Christ's example. Any thoughts on that?
And that is definitely the more Christ-like approach to it, in my view. I'm remembering a story in the New Testament. I don't remember whether it was Christ himself or one of the apostles, but who encountered a eunuch. And Mama, you might be able to tell this scripture story a little bit better than I can.
So it was one of the apostles, and the eunuch had stopped in his travels and was reading the scriptures, and came to a verse he didn't understand. It's in Acts chapter 8 that there is a Ethiopian eunuch, and he had gone to Jerusalem to worship, clearly a believer, and then he was returning home to Ethiopia, and he was sitting in his chariot and reading the book of Isaiah, and Philip was walking by, and the Spirit prompted him and said, "Go near and join thyself to this chariot." And Philip hurried over and heard him reading the book of Isaiah and said, "So do you understand what you're reading?" And the person said, "You know, no, how can I unless someone explains it to me? I just don't understand this." And it was a wonderful verse in Isaiah about the Savior and about him being led as a lamb to the slaughter. And so the eunuch asks Philip, "Who is the prophet speaking about?" And there is Philip's perfect opportunity to teach this person about the Savior. And so he does. And at the end of that teaching, you know, they came to a body of water, and the eunuch asks to be baptized. And Philip says, "If thou believest with all thine heart, thou mayest." He says, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God." And so they stop the chariot, and Philip gets out and baptizes this eunuch. Now, we don't know if what the condition of this eunuch was, where he was surgically a eunuch or born a eunuch or what. But we know that to Philip, it didn't matter. This was a person who had a testimony of Christ and wanted to be baptized, and so he was.
I love that. I'm thinking, that's a great story, Anika and Grayson. Thanks for sharing that. I'm thinking of just the name change that Saul chose Paul, and we gave him permission to do that in Acts 13. I'm also just going to read a Facebook post of when I talked about transgender on Facebook. A woman said, "Also, stop warning parents with LGBTQ kids to never label their children as gay, trans, queer. If a child has the guts to tell their Mormon parents they are LGBTQ, it's not a half-baked label they will grow out of. It is their identity, and they're asking for real, life-saving validation from the people closest to them." And, you know, your family did that. And it's probably, I don't know if it saved your life, Grayson, but it sounds like you've used some terms that were, you've talked openly about suicidal times in your life and crashing, and I call it sometimes the bottom of the iceberg stuff. One of the things I realize as a YSA bishop, what I can see above the iceberg is the stuff I can see, and I kind of put that on the shelf sometimes and went to try to figure out what's going on at the bottom of the iceberg, and then I could really help a YSA or my own children. It seems like that's what you did, and you could see the crashing and the burning and the unhappiness, and I think a lot of that seems to be pretty consistent with parents of LGBTQ children. And as they kind of get down to their gender identity or their sexual orientation, and that becomes something that can support and affirm, then their children do much better. Does that feel consistent with what you've learned in your own lived experience?
It is, and it's consistent with the scientific data. The Family Acceptance Project studied LGBT youth and young adults in the context of their families, and looked at whether the family's behavior was accepting or rejecting. And they found that having an accepting family was literally life-saving for LGBT young people, that they were less likely to have attempted suicide, they were less likely to have abused illegal drugs, they were less likely to have engaged in risky sexual behaviors, less likely to have experienced homelessness, less likely to acquire a sexually transmitted infection, on and on and on. Loving and accepting your child protects your child. No parent's protection is perfect, but it's what we all want to do as parents, is protect our children to the degree we can and help them be safe. And accepting your child is one of the things you can do to protect your child and help them be safe.
That's very helpful. I love that. And I kind of used to use this term, nice tidy box Mormonism, where everything fits in this nice box. And I, as a young parent, my wife and I growing up with six kids, we kind of thought we could just kind of keep everything in nice tidy box Mormonism. And as the older I've got and I've seen more families, I realize that that is not a realistic goal, and maybe not what the goal should be. The goal should be to love, to support, to affirm, to keep the family circle together, versus trying to keep everything in this nice, tidy box. It just doesn't seem like that's God's plan. I sometimes think of a vending machine God. I've been thinking about this a lot. I don't know if our listeners will like this or not, but I sort of think we put coins in the vending machine as parents that represent the good works that we do and our hopes and our prayers. And we press C3, which represents the desired outcome for our children. And between pressing C3, there's a pause there, and you kind of watch the vending machine, and suddenly D4 comes out. And the D4 represents something different than what you kind of hope for. And so you would think, And I still believe in putting in the right coins and doing the things as parents to do the best for our kids. But I think somehow you may think I put in the wrong coins or something happened. And the more I think about this, the more I think D4 represents what God wants to have happen. And some of these outcomes that are not anticipated back in nice, tidy box Mormonism are not things because we put in the wrong coins or something went awry, but they're just part of God's beautiful plan for all of us. And our job is to understand versus try to put everything back in a nice, tidy box. Any thoughts on that? I'm still trying to figure out if that's a good analogy or not.
I like that analogy. Another thing that I've thought about, because I really struggled with the theological implications of being a member of the LGBTQ community and also being Mormon, and with the difficulty and the imperfection of the guidance that comes from, you know, both local leaders and leaders higher up, that you know, of how this can be the true church and yet there's also this imperfection, and and it's definitely made me have to come to terms with the fact that, you know, we don't believe in prophetic infallibility, that all of our leaders, regardless of how high up they are mortal, same as anyone else, and are thus capable of having limitations to their understanding due to biases. I mean, we can even look back into the scriptures and see examples of that. We can look at the story of Jonah, who was a prophet and was called to preach the gospel to the people of Nineveh, and the gospel that he brought was true. And yet, even after he had brought the gospel to the people of Nineveh and they had repented and changed their ways and accept the word that he brought, Jonah was still prejudiced against the people of Nineveh and still thought that God was going to, you know, rain down fire and brimstone and destroy them. And so we can see that he was a genuine prophet, and yet he was still mortal and thus capable of having those biases, and God doesn't take away our agency and forcibly change our minds. He gives us chances to grow, but we have the choice to accept those opportunities to grow or not, and that is true for leaders as well as everyone else.
I sometimes wish there was another chapter in the book of Jonah where we found out what Jonah did with that knowledge he got.
Interesting.
At the end, you know, because, I mean, who wrote down the book of Jonah? Who was there for that experience? Only Jonah.
Only Jonah.
And so I would like to hope that he grew to see the people of Nineveh more the way God saw them, as precious and worthy of his message and his love.
And yet, I think there might have been reasoning for why the story ends where it does, because it also could have happened, you know, in theory, that maybe Jonah never did get there all the way, and that's probably happened, you know, countless times throughout human history, that people haven't gotten it all figured out at the end of the day, that life is short, and sometimes we don't manage to fix all of our mistakes before we get to the end. But that doesn't mean that it's impossible to do better.
In the church essay on race and the priesthood, there's a line that I love. It says, God is the author of diversity. And I think if we look at the human beings around us and see the diversity of their experiences, we can say, God is the author of this diversity. Diversity in human beings is beautiful. I can't remember which general authority talked in conference about, you know, that God didn't create the whole orchestra just to value the piccolos.
That's a great quote.
Yeah.
That our variety of experience is what makes the human experience rich and full, like an orchestra.
I love that. We're kind of coming to the end. I'm going to have you do some closing comments, but I love this beauty of diversity. I love Elder Holland talking about the choir and the harmony. It's not just one part. You know this, Grayson, better than I do because you're a singer, very talented singer. But I love the visual of the harmony that the diversity creates, and we need that. I've also tried to learn to hold ambiguity in my brain versus certainty. It doesn't seem to me that's a digression. That's not a word. But I think our listeners understand that, a step back in my faith or my mental framework, but actually a maturity perhaps as I'm getting older is to be able to hold ambiguity and less certainty and create space for lived experiences that I don't firsthand understand, but I can honor them because they are other people's lived experience, and I don't see that as a threat to me, but part of just the beautiful diversity. And as I've shared before on other podcasts, to your point, Nika, my life is enhanced by having LGBTQ people in my life. I've felt that sometimes my role is to kind of bring voice, and that happens at times in this podcast. But what's happening for me personally is the beauty that's coming into my life and the increased light and understanding by having LGBTQ people in my life and the things they can teach me. So sometimes I think I'm on the road and the Samaritan, you know, I'm being rescued by the things that are being shared with me and the insights I'm getting about the life of Christ and how to be a better follower of Christ and come unto him. You have a maturity about you, Grace, and I keep sitting across from you realizing you're 23, but you have the spiritual maturity of someone much older than you, and I admire you for that, and I would sense that if God put a button in front of you and could change you into not being a transgender man, you wouldn't do that. Because as you've reflected in this podcast, it's been a brutal road, but it's also been a beautiful road, and you're in a great spot. And I think you're a great example for other transgender people and all the beauty that's come into your life, even though it's a more difficult road. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Grayson, for some final thoughts, and then Nika for some final thoughts for our listeners.
Yeah, I like what you said about the importance of this harmony of different experiences and how that helps all of us. I think the part of what makes the gospel message, what makes Christ's message so powerful, is love among differences, that we are all individuals with our own gifts, our own perspectives, our own experiences, but that by loving each other, we can act as one and become better than any singular experience could be. And I feel like I've learned so much about family and about love from my journey as a transgender person, that I have learned about the importance of having people to rely on in my difficult times. I have learned about the importance of seeing and respecting people whose experiences are different from mine. It's really brought deeper meaning to what it talks about in the scriptures of, can the hands say to the feet, I have no need of thee, or can the eyes say to the ears, I have no need of thee, that all of the parts of the body are different, and even the ones that might seem weaker or strange in some respect, that they are all important, and by being unified in love, they can be one body and be something greater than what any of them could be by themselves. And so, when we're seeing one another, we don't just need to be looking at each other as all being measured up against some yardstick as, you know, okay, who is closest to being this singular vision of the perfect person. Rather, we can see the relationships between one another, not who we are as compared against each other, but as who we are standing together. And that is one of the things about the gospel that means the most to me, is that we are here to learn how to love each other and work together.
Thank you, Grayson. This is wonderful. That's a great church talk. Thank you, Grayson. There's a wonderful spirit as you share wonderful insights. Nika?
While Grayson was talking, I was thinking about the scripture about having our hearts knit together in unity and love. And I was thinking about a Fair Isle sweater. And Fair Isle sweaters have lots of different colors of yarn knit in to create their beautiful patterns. And the unity that makes that sweater is not everything the same. It is different colors of yarn, each contributing their own beauty to the whole. I would again like to remind parents of transgender children to please reach out and find other parents to talk to get the information that you need to help support and care for your child. I know after we figured out that Grayson was transgender, it was a year and a half before I met another Mormon mom with a transgender child. And I don't want any parent to feel like they have to spend a year and a half or any time alone without other parents to talk to. That reach out and there's help. There's people for you to talk to. We won't tell you what to do to help your child, but we'll help talk through some of the options so that you can talk over those options with your child.
That's really helpful. Thank you, Nika and Grayson, for joining us. You two are awesome. There's a wonderful spirit here. I've learned so much, and thank you for sharing your story. You have a beautiful family. This is what families are all about. That I wish our listeners could see the tender interactions between Nika and Grayson during this podcast. You two are incredibly close, and it's beautiful to me to see parents and children close as you walk this road together, and you have a wonderful family, your entire family. So thank you for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.